Thank you for joining us today for the 20th episode of the Whitaker Report podcast, a discussion with thought leaders about the future of economic development, site selection, and corporate real estate. My name is Dean Whitaker, President and CEO of Whitaker Associates, a data analytic company serving the needs of economic development and commercial real estate organizations. I will be your host as we endeavor to see what's next, to see around the corner. Today we will be speaking with Nathan Ole, President and CEO of the International Economic Development Council. Nathan is an internationally recognized expert in economic development and a leader in public and private nonprofit organizations. He currently serves as the President and CEO of the International Economic Development Council, a nonprofit, nonpartisan membership organization serving the economic developers with more than 5,000 members globally. In 2017, he was selected as one of the 40 under 40 rising stars in economic development internationally. He has served at the highest level of government and nonprofit sectors, providing leadership, policy, and outreach expertise on both urban and rural issues. Previously to the IEDC, Nathan was the chief executive officer of the Rural Community Assistance Partnership, a nonprofit focused on economic development and access to water in rural community across the country. Please join me as we welcome Nathan Ole to the Whitaker Report podcast. Thank you, Nathan, for joining us today. I appreciate you taking your time. It's a pleasure to have a few minutes to visit with you about International Economic Development Council and the future of economic development. That's kind of our theme today. But as we get started, you're relatively new in the job. What is it now, 2 years or so?
There's 13 months, actually, so just over a year.
All right. So after 13 months, tell us a little about yourself. What's been the experience like, and where do you come from, and what brought you to this organization?
Well, first of all, Dean, thank you for the opportunity to be with you today. It's always great to chat and connect, and appreciate the opportunity to talk about not just myself, but the IEDC, obviously. Mm-hmm. So I grew up in Michigan. I went to Michigan State for school and got into the economic development field like many others. I kind of stumbled into it. So I started my economic development journey really back in about 2007, just as the recession was starting. And Michigan, obviously, was one of the first states to really start to see and feel the impacts of that. Right. And, you know, it was both the worst time, but also the best time to be doing economic development. The worst, self-explanatory, jobs were hemorrhaging, our supply chain in Michigan, all the way across the auto sector, and many others were really hurting. But it also was the best because you had to be innovative. You had to think differently about how you were going to, you know, attack these challenges. And in Michigan, you've got everything from the city of Detroit and certainly all the major automotive, you know, OEMs that are in that area, all the way to the Upper Peninsula, where you're dealing with very small communities that have different and distinct challenges. And so it gave us a chance. And I was part of a team there that ran three different economic development boards at the state level, a whole host of approaches to trying to drive economic opportunity in the state. And I served there at the state level for 5 years. I moved to the federal level at the U.S. Economic Development Administration back in 2014 to 2017. And then before coming to the IEDC, I ran a national nonprofit called the Rural Community Assistance Partnership, where we worked on a whole host of issues, including economic development and entrepreneurship, but also things like access to safe drinking water, sanitary wastewater, building capacity in really small communities across the U.S. And so the IEDC is both an organization that I've known for more than a decade, but also obviously now have been in this seat for a little over a year. And it really is a remarkable organization. The history that exists, the foundation that's been built by so many people that have contributed not just to the IEDC, but to the economic development field, and the opportunity to build upon that and grow from that foundation is really exceptional. And it's been a lot of fun. I've learned a ton, met a ton of people, and spent just a lot of time in the first year really in my own kind of listening tour, trying to understand what we're doing well, but probably most importantly, what weren't we doing as well, or what do we need to be doing more of? How do we engage in a deeper way with folks and make sure that not only their voices are heard, but actually help us as we start to think about the future of IEDC and the future of economic development?
I think you've had an initiative underway as a strategic planning initiative. Is that currently underway?
It is. Yeah. So we started a brand new strategic planning process back in the early fall of 2022, and we're still in the midst of it. It is really a deep level of engagement. We've done tons of surveys, focus groups, even one-on-one interviews with stakeholders, not just current members, but even folks that aren't members that maybe should be that are part of the economic development field, but maybe haven't been as connected to IDC in the past. Both to understand where those opportunities are and what we should be focused on, but also to kind of rethink how we do this work and how we serve not just our members, but the economic development field itself. And it's been a really instructive process. I'm really excited about what's going to come out of it. And that engagement piece has been really important to me to make sure that we have a voice of people from communities large and small from all regions of the world, to make sure that we are taking a comprehensive look at the way that we do our work, but also how we continue to serve the economic development profession.
Very cool. I did look, I've been a member, by the way, for a very long time. I won't say how long, but even before you were IEDC, I go back as far as the AEDC.
Yeah, absolutely.
Long ways. Anyway, you're doing a marvelous job, and that's feedback for you. But
thank
I've
you.
Heard it from many people that they're really delighted with the leadership you're providing and where you're taking the organization. The depth and breadth of the website could take days to go through all the things that's there. So I would really encourage our listeners to go to your website and take a look, because IEDCOnline.org, correct?
Yes, absolutely. It's got a ton of resources there. It is an opportunity for people not only to learn what IDC is, but also start to really dive into what economic development is and how they can play a larger role there. So absolutely, IEDCOnline.org.
Yeah. I'm going to ask you kind of a future-oriented question, because that's kind of what our podcast themes are. It's about the future of economic development is what I've been trying to focus on with our series of podcasts. What do you see as what's your vision for where technology and the innovation is headed? What type of things are you seeing?
So I think we're at a really interesting time for economic development. Obviously, you know, the last three and a half years have brought significant change, not just to economic development, but to the world. And it has brought us to a more connected world where you and I can be on a Zoom call here doing this call. But also it's started to make us rethink what are the end goals of economic development and how do we drive more equitable economic opportunities as a result of that. Part of this is a recognition of how economic development has been done in the past, the good, the bad, and the ugly, quite frankly, and where it's been successful and where maybe it has not been as successful. And how do we need to change or think about different approaches that are going to lead to more equitable economic outcomes? And technology is a huge piece of this. Whether you're talking about the ability to connect with people, not just, in neighboring communities or even neighboring states, but across the world and to learn from one another. Mm-hmm. But also, how are we thinking about, AI and other technologies that are going to change and create new opportunities for communities to participate in ways that maybe they haven't in the past. One, kind of far out there thing, but potentially part of the future is how do we do site selection in a way that allows more communities to participate, where they can actually be doing, site selection activities and working with site selectors and others in the industry to help them see their community, see the opportunities without actually physically having to be there and travel to do that. I think there's a number of ways that technology is going to continue to accelerate in the economic development field. I always use the antidote, 25 years ago when I was a kid, the two rules that your parents had for you were don't talk to strangers and never get in the car with someone you don't know. And today we literally call strangers to get into their car to get places, right? Through Uber or through Lyft and other places. And so technology is a part of what we do every single day. It is accelerating every single day. And if we don't ensure that we build technology into the way that we think about economic development, the tools and resources we can utilize to accelerate economic development, then we're going to really, fall behind. And quite frankly, it's going to exacerbate some of the challenges we've seen in the past.
Yeah, I think one of the things I would say is I think technology is changing at an exponential rate, and we're trying to catch up to it at a linear rate.
Absolutely.
And the only way to catch up to it is to take a shortcut and go where it's going and be there when it gets there. And so that's kind of what I try to preach in, when I'm talking about technology and where it's taking us. One of the other questions I had is the role that, we're all looking at climate change and wondering what that's going to mean for our cities and towns. And what is IEDC doing to address that issue?
It is absolutely an issue that is continuing to play a larger and more impactful role in the economic development field. I mean, there's no way to not say that we're seeing 500-year storms and flooding events that we just hadn't seen at the same rates in the past. And in the past, you know, maybe we've taken a more reactive approach where we, you know, when a disaster happens, then we react and we figure out how do we deal with that. I think you're starting to see economic developers take a much more proactive approach to this and think about mitigation and resilience and how do we build opportunities for communities to deal with these issues on the front end rather than the back end, which costs money up front, but saves a lot of money on the back end when done right. The IDC every year puts out 3 to 4 different papers through our economic development research program focused on emerging trends or different topics in economic development. And over the past year, we released a report on climate change and its impacts on economic development. We are participating. We've got a sustainability advisory committee that's part of our structure to make sure that we're emerging topics and trends and thinking about the tools and resources that communities need to focus on that resilience piece or how to build mitigation efforts in. And we're starting to show up at different conversations. So I was just down in Miami a couple weeks ago, talking to Miami-Dade County about what they're doing and participating in a conference focused on climate change and actively participating in conversations around economic development and workforce development and, you know, bringing together leaders in these industries to talk about what they're doing, what they're struggling with, and what types of tools and resources do they need to be able to address these issues in the future. And so it will continue to be both an issue for economic development, but also an opportunity for us to really think differently about how we integrate these effects into our everyday plans.
I'm curious also about what IEDC is doing in the inequity and wealth disparity issue, which is kind of a major theme.
This to me is maybe the most fundamental aspect of not just what we're doing, but what the industry is starting to see and recognize and acknowledge. Mm-hmm. So, you know, part of this process is acknowledging what has happened in the past and what effects it has had on different communities. And these are difficult conversations. These are conversations that have been happening for decades, in some cases even longer, in communities. And it happens on racial lines, it happens on population size, you know, whether you're talking rural versus urban. It happens on the international scale when we're talking, you know, United States versus countries in Africa or Asia or even the EU. And part of it is acknowledging what practices have led in the past to inequities and why that happened, what structures were put in place that allowed that to happen, but then starting to really deeply engage in a very intentional way with those communities that may have been left behind in the past to make sure that their voices are not just a part of the conversation, but leading the conversation wherever possible. It is imperative to be measuring these things to make sure that we are actually truly making a difference in driving more equitable economic outcomes. And so last year in January of 2022, IDC released the Equity and Economic Development Playbook, which is designed to really help economic developers understand what role they can play in driving more equitable economic outcomes. We've also created a new fellowship program where we're actually embedding fellows in communities, both big and small, across the United States to help specifically focus on equity issues and economic development in those communities. So we're helping to build capacity, but also helping to build a cohort of leaders for the future that are going to be really important players in making sure that equity not just is a part of the conversation, but actually is a focus of economic development efforts. And it is not something that we do by ourselves. There's many other organizations that are at the table doing very similar work and collaborating with us. But in the end, it comes down to communities and it comes down to leaders in communities having tough conversations and being willing to have those tough conversations to make sure that we're not leaving others out of conversations and that we're not leaving them out of opportunities and ensuring that we both can build the capacity now for communities to participate, but quite frankly, to make sure that we've done enough work now that in 10 years, those communities have the same opportunities that they want and need to really be able to build opportunities within their own regions.
Looking at our economic situation around the country, what's being done to help make our economies more resilient? So if we get another pandemic or whatever else might happen to disrupt our economics, what is IEDC doing along those lines?
So I think, you know, one of the emerging trends in economic development, at least in my eyes, is a little bit of a pivot from kind of the traditional economic development approach, which is in many ways focused on competition, right? Community versus community, going after a company or an industry and trying to drive opportunity that way, to a much more collaborative approach, to understanding those communities around you, big and small, urban, rural, suburban, you know, have an impact and an opportunity if you collaborate in the right way to actually benefit one another. And that's a change. It is not an easy thing. You know, as anyone who's worked at the local level understands, that is not an easy conversation. It's not an easy thing to do. But I think it is, especially the last 3 years, have taught us that if we aren't connected, then we are falling behind. And, you know, whether we're talking about the connection between communities or whether we're talking about the connection between economic development and workforce development and housing and infrastructure, all of these issues are intertwined. And if we're not interacting on a daily basis with those other, what we might traditionally not call economic development, but are related to economic development, if we're not engaging in those conversations, if we're not inviting them to our conversations and showing up to theirs, then we are not doing ourselves, we're not doing our communities, we're not doing our regions the service that they actually deserve as a part of this. And so that, to me, is where the future of economic development is headed. How do we collaborate? How do we find opportunities to build upon what one another's trying to do? And there's always going to be competition in economic development. That's just part of the game. It's part of the way this works. But where we can build collaboration, where we can think about the interconnectedness between economic development, community development, workforce development, et cetera, it's only going to benefit us, only going to benefit our regions, and only going to benefit, you know, the world itself.
Very cool. One of the things I, in my past, I was talking to a Southern Illinois mayor, and he said, collaboration is what happens when competition fails. So he finally came to the conclusion that they'd be better off working together than competing with each other. So I think you're spot on to what you've suggested as far as the future of economic development is about collaboration. And that's one of the things I've heard over and over again about your leadership. It's really, that's fundamental to what you're doing with the organization and where you're taking it. I'm going to switch gears just a little bit because I sense that there's a passion in you for the rural communities. Is that fair?
It is. So I've worked in big cities. I've worked a lot in rural communities and worked with tribal communities. So I understand the complexities in all of those places. But obviously, when I was at RCAP, you know, I spent 4.5 years specifically focused on the smallest of the small communities across the United States in every state and territory. And you know, rural America has really unique challenges, but also really unique opportunities. And I think they often get left out of the conversation because it feels like you can't make a big impact. And part of, you know, whether we're talking about the metrics for economic development or whether we're talking just, you know, pure scale, you know, there's a context there that is lost in those conversations. Oftentimes, you know, I used to say, you know, the impact of the creation of 5 jobs in a community of 500 is very different than the impact of the creation of 5 jobs in a community of 500,000. But when we look at traditional metrics, when we look at how we talk about communities and opportunities to build, you know, new things, that context is lost. And so I absolutely have a special place in my heart for small communities, for rural communities. I've done work in communities in, you know, every state and territory across the United States, and certainly internationally as well. And, you know, there are absolutely really distinct challenges that rural America and rural communities across the world are facing. And it goes back to that conversation around collaboration and building regional approaches, because in some cases, it's not possible for a community 500 to have all of the resources and tools and assets that they need to succeed. But if they can find ways to work with other communities, whether there are other small communities around them or even a, you know, an adjacent larger or micropolitan community, that's where, you know, the real opportunity lies. And if we forget or don't spend the time to focus on those small communities, we just say, oh, you know, throw our hands up and say there's no hope, you know, we are actually not serving in the way that we always want to be serving as economic developers.
You see any swing back towards urban living, away from urbanization, or are we continuing to urbanize more and more?
So I think obviously COVID played a role in driving a little bit more of notice and attention toward the opportunities for people to move to smaller communities and you know, the quality of life aspects that depending on your age and your family and things that you want, you know, there's certainly different quality of life pieces, right? In a very large community, you've got access to public transportation and get to things pretty quickly. The density of supermarkets around you or access to doctors and things like that is prevalent in urban communities. But in rural communities, you've got a little bit slower pace of life. You might be able to be in the mountains or at the lake, you know, within 10 minutes versus an hour drive. And so I think certainly the pandemic played a role in starting to think about that. I think the other piece of that is a recognition that things like broadband are vitally important for communities of all sizes. It doesn't matter whether you're the largest city in the country or whether you're this, you know, a town of 50 people. Broadband access, whether it's for a job, whether it's for education, whether it's for doctor visits, is vitally important. And that, I think, has brought a connection, a recognition that the needs of rural and urban places are very similar. There's dichotomies that are different and things that change those needs, but the fundamental needs, water infrastructure, broadband, housing, all those things are needed and prevalent in communities of all sizes. And so I think you're starting to see, you know, an emerging trend of people moving to other places. You know, I'm in the Washington, D.C. area, and, you know, rental rates, commercial real estate is really hurting. And that's not unique to D.C. That's happening in every community across the country. And we just did a report on real estate, both commercial and housing, and its impacts on economic development, which I would encourage people to go look at. But what I will say is there are challenges in both urban and rural communities. There are opportunities for people to go and explore and find what they want and what opportunities exist. I think it has leveled the playing field a little bit over the last 3 years and provided maybe more opportunities for small communities to take on those opportunities. But again, if they don't have access to broadband, if they don't have water access, if they don't have the housing stock needed to support an influx of growth, you know, then they're going to be really challenged.
We just passed, I'm in Holland, Michigan, by the way, and we just passed a $30 million bond issue in August for broadband to every home in our 30,000 population city.
Yep. But
before that, we did a pilot project where we put in broadband to all the buildings in our downtown area. So we have, and the unique part about this is it's municipally owned. So it's like owning your streets. So we have an electric utility company, also municipally owned, that generates about $30 million a year surplus as we sell power out on the grid because of the efficiency of our power plants.
Yep.
And so you put all that together, and now we're investing in that infrastructure you've mentioned, which is the broadband. And we've had it for a while, 1 gig up and down, $42 a month. So you see the, and back to disparity, you know, we're a resort town on Lake Michigan, and you put in broadband, and now you got remote workers coming here to live because of the quality of life. So it's a whole different game that we're playing right now, but it's been a very interesting place to live. We have a snow melt system that melts the snow in the downtown using the surplus heat out of the power plant. And so just very unique, but it all goes back to something I wanted to ask you about, and that's leadership. And one of the things that I've seen over and over again is the quality of the leadership in the community makes all the difference. What is IEDC doing in that area?
I think what you just hit on, Dean, is maybe the single most important aspect for economic development: leadership. It is community leaders, and you know, in some cases, it is a true economic developer, like an economic development organization that's leading this. But in some cases, especially in small communities, right, they don't have an EDO in place. It could be the local mayor, it could be a local county official, it could be a local entrepreneur. It looks and feels differently in every community, but that leadership aspect is absolutely crucial. We at the IEDC have been focused on this and are going to continue to focus on this. We're creating a brand new program called the Economic Recovery Corps, and it is focused on two main things. One is to help build capacity in distressed communities of all sizes, including urban, rural, tribal, suburban communities across the United States. And we're going to embed 68 fellows into these communities to try and help accelerate their economic development efforts. The second piece of that is also to create a pipeline of the next generation of leaders in economic development. We want to make sure, we know there's an aging group of economic developers that are going to retire over the next 10 years. And if we don't do the work now to help that next generation build up and be able to take the throne and really lead the future of economic development now, you know, we're going to have a dearth of experience, a dearth of expertise, and certainly a lack of leadership. And so the Economic Recovery Corps is meant to start to build that pipeline, to start to help, you know, build capacity in communities of all sizes, but also to make sure that we are talking not just about next generation, but helping them have a voice in what is economic development in the future and how do they play a role? What is the service aspect to this industry? How do we get more people engaged in economic development so that we, you know, not just have a pipeline of the next generation of leaders, but also start the pipeline of folks to come into the industry and understand how they can play a role.
That's fascinating. Also, one of the other issues that I've bumped into is the volunteers need to understand what economic development is. So when they do have an EDO and an economic developer on site, that they support and understand what it is they're doing. Is IEDC doing anything in the volunteer education realm?
So I think you'll see us over the coming years kind of step into what is economic development.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it is this kind of amorphous term that we all as economic developers know and understand, but the public writ large doesn't know what economic development is or what economic developers do. And so I think you're going to start to see us over the coming years really step into that and help people across the spectrum, whether it's volunteers, whether it is workforce development partners, whether it is infrastructure or folks, you know, really get a better idea and understanding of what economic development is and what economic developers do and how they can play a role in helping to facilitate other things across the community or region that they're engaged in. It is, you know, the first question I ask of anyone in economic development is, how did you get into this work?
Mm-hmm.
And inevitably, someone just like me has a story about how they kind of stumbled into this. There's not a clear pathway for people to get into economic development. There aren't, you know, when you take, I remember back in middle school or high school, you would take a test, you know, it would tell you your competencies and what are the things you should think about, you know, a fireman or a doctor or a lawyer or a teacher. Economic development was never a part of those conversations, right? Because there just isn't an understanding of what it is. And there's not a clear pathway for people to see how they can play a role. And so I think you're going to see the IDC really step into that in a deeper way over the coming years and trying to help lead a conversation about what economic development is and how you can get better engaged, and whether you're an economic developer yourself or whether you're in a community that might engage with an economic developer.
Very cool. Well, you've been a delight to talk with this morning, and I appreciate that. Is there anything else that you'd like to share with us today before we wrap up?
So I think the one thing I would say is there's an open invitation for people to come and learn with us. We want not only to make sure that we're serving people that are currently engaging with us, but that we can help be a resource for anyone across the economic development spectrum, whether that is a true economic developer, you know, that's embedded in an economic development organization, or whether it is, you know, someone in housing, someone in infrastructure, someone in community development that maybe hasn't felt like a part of the conversation in the past. There's absolutely an open door. We want to figure out how we can partner, how we can build opportunities collaboratively, how we can make sure that people understand what we're doing, but more importantly, maybe how we can support what others are trying to do and accomplish. And so, you know, I would say anyone who wants to have a conversation, please reach out to me. I'm always looking to have the next conversation. We're always looking for new ideas, ways that we can help support what others are doing. And we want to make sure that people understand that collaboration is in everything that we do, that we want to build true collaboration. We want to build partnerships. We want to make sure that we are both serving communities and the people in this profession, but also that those communities feel like they've got an opportunity to engage with us in a deep way. We want to learn from one another. We want to, you know, explore with one another. And quite frankly, we want to celebrate with one another because there are so many things to celebrate in this profession that kind of get left out of the conversations. Big and small victories are really important. And it's something that I talk about with my team all the time. You know, let's make sure that we're celebrating small and the big things that we achieve together. And we want to make sure we do that for the economic development field and for communities as well.
Very cool. Well, thank you so much for your time. And I appreciate it. Let us know what we can do to support you, too.
Thank you. Thank you for all that you're doing. Holland is a great community. I spent a ton of time. My best friend ever went to Hope College. So I spent a ton of time in Holland as a college student and beyond with Tulip Time and other things. So thank you for all that you're doing. Thank you for the opportunity to be with you today.
Nathan, thank you for sharing your thoughts with us today about the future of economic development. You've given us a glimpse of what we may be around the corner and using technology to help us tell our story. Thank you for listening to this episode of the Whitaker Report podcast, Seeing Around Corners, and a special thanks to Nathan Ole for helping us better understand the rapid changes and how we can prepare for those changes ahead. Again, I'm Dean Whitaker, your host. Thank you for listening.